Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Blood Song by Holly Manns. Narrated by Ali Shea and James Cavanaugh. Prologue. Amarine Castle, Mage Realm. A mellow breeze sighed through the gardens, infused with the scents of fresh grass, springtime blooms, and a deadly stranger. Shayari canted her head toward the footsteps approaching from the shadowed corridor. Male, she decided, and judging from the prickling of the little hairs on her skin, he was also fey. Dark fey. Only the Unseelie inspired such disquiet in her. Their unholy magic whispered of shadows and rot and secret things lying in the bowels of the earth that were better left unspoken. Theirs was a devious and dangerous race. Shayari would know. She was, unfortunately, acquainted with one of the worst of their lot. Ruthless. Mercenary. Assassin. Gabriel Blacksage, a man as lethal as he was insufferable. And presently, the man was also obnoxiously late. Gabriel should have arrived half a candle past, or as the mages in their little ticking time-tellers would say, over 3 hours ago. The tread of the stranger's boots on the cold stone told her he was not the man she awaited. This man's strides were subtle but soldier-like, nothing akin to Gabriel's quiet footfalls and his tendency to slink about like the shadows he manipulated. She wasn't the only one who noticed. "That's not Gabriel," Evangeline commented with a frown. After the first hour of wearing out her soles and her scowl, Shayari had earned both the Mage Queen's sympathy and company. Evangeline had taken to reading to her in one of the castle's many charming courtyards, joined by one unnerving other. An archmage, who radiated such extreme power that his presence was near suffocating, had occupied the stone bench beside his queen, listening to her read a child's fable with the look of a man utterly bewitched.
"It's Gabriel's second in command,"
the archmage replied.
"Arcus Ironfall."
Evangeline set her book aside and leaned into her mate. "Strange. I expected Gabriel to take Shaya home." A comment that only compounded the niggle growing in Shayari's chest. 8 moons ago, Shayari would not have understood enough of the mage tongue to grasp Evangeline and Declan's exchange. 8 moons ago, Shayari would never have thought to be acquainted with an Unseelie assassin, much less wondering about his absence. The Fae, Arcus, must have felt the weight of the Archmage's focus, because he wisely halted 10 paces shy of Evangeline and sank to one knee.
"Lord Archmage and Lady Thorn."
Shayari found herself under the brief scrutiny of a lavender-hued gaze before the dark head lowered in a silent show of subservience. Toying idly with his queen's fingers, the Archmage kept his attention fixed upon the kneeling Fae, who didn't speak, or so it seemed. Arcus was clearly conversing with the Archmage through the mind. Once, Shayari would have found the ensuing silence strange and unsettling. Now she appreciated, envied even, telepathic conversations. The Archmage finally flicked a Viridian gaze to Shayari, but his expression gave nothing away as he spoke in fluid Tenemodish.
"Gabriel is aware you're due to return home today, but he is indisposed."
He nodded at the Fae.
"He's sent Arcus to take you home in his stead."
The niggle burrowed deeper beneath her breastbone, like a millipede crawling under a rock. Indisposed? Had Gabriel gotten into another fight? Was he hurt? But Shayari crushed her questions in her fists, along with the unwarranted worry. Gabriel Blacksage was deadlier than a starving pack of wolveri. He could take care of himself. Even so, something must have shown on her face, because Evangeline reached over to squeeze her arm. "I'm sure he's fine," the queen whispered with a reassuring smile. Mortified by her transparency, Shaori lifted a shoulder in an attempt at nonchalance. Evangeline's lips took on a wry curve. He's just caught up with work. You know how he can be. That was the problem. After 8 long moons, Shaori did know. Gabriel could be as persistent as a hound on a hunt when he got caught up in a task, but he wasn't one to go back on his word. He'd said, albeit teasingly, that he wouldn't miss the day of her departure. So she'd expected, however grudgingly, for him to be here. Then again, whatever Arcus had conveyed to the Lord Archmage and Evangeline did not appear to concern them, so why should it concern her? Shaori nodded her understanding and forced a small smile for good measure. Gabriel didn't need to be the one to create a portal. Any portal maker would suffice. But Gabriel had served as her unofficial interpreter for the duration of her stay in the Mage Realm. Despite their propensity to clash like flint and friction, she had grown a little attached. She bit into her cheek. Accustomed. She was accustomed, not attached to him. She would have liked to bid him farewell. That was all. But clearly Gabriel did not think she warranted a goodbye. Evangeline rose on her tiptoes, scattering Shaiari's thoughts to draw her into a tight squeeze. The Mage Queen was as slight as Shaiari was tall.
I'm going to miss you, Evangeline murmured, her voice wavering with emotion. Thank you for coming here, and for everything you've done for me all these months.
The magnolia flowers in the large ceramic pots around the pavilion seemed to droop in tandem with the queen's downturned lips. Despite her melancholy, Shaori chuckled in her usual, breathy, voiceless way. To think she'd once thought this waif of a woman frail and her affinity for magic feeble. Eyes misting, she pulled away from Evangeline's embrace in order to speak with her hands. Please don't cry, Evie, or you'll make me do the same. Evangeline bit down on her lips with an earnest sniffle, her nose turning the same shade of pink as the surrounding magnolias.
I'm sorry, but I just can't help it.
Shaori scrubbed hastily at her own eyes while she smiled at the irony. Once she'd resented being sent here, and now she loathed to leave.
We will meet again, won't we? Won't you come visit me?
Evangeline would not be accompanying Shaori on her return. The castle's lead healer, Mylin, was so overdue in her gestation that she was apt to go into labor at any moment, and Evangeline was understandably eager to remain close. Flowers weren't the only thing the Mage Queen could control.
I would love to show you my home and for you to meet my people, Shaori shined enthusiastically, trying to shake off her gloom. I think you will like the rainforest, and...
She slowed her hands as she noted Evangeline's increasingly mystified expression. Though the queen had taken the time to learn, she hadn't grasped beyond the basic motions of Shaiari's sign language. Evangeline's brows puckered, and she blew out a breath.
I'm sorry, Shaiari. I think you've lost me.
Clearly concerned about Shaiari's comprehension of Magirian, the Archmage repeated Evangeline's response in Animadish. Shaori lowered her hands with a resigned shake of her head. The Archmage might speak her people's tongue fluently, but he was not versed in hand-speak either. Unlike Gabriel. At the thought of her absent interpreter, Shaori's mood further soured. She pasted on a cheery smile and forcibly tamped down all thoughts of an inconsiderate male who couldn't be bothered to bid her a final farewell. And why did it matter? Their paths would never cross again.
Chapter 1. Present Day. The Red Den. City of Evanmere. Fey Realm. Gabriel sauntered from shifting shadows onto solid stone, his footfall silent against the cacophony of delighted fools and despairing drunks. The Red Den was as packed as always. Carousers reveled while patrons occupied the card tables, reeking of alcohol, false hope, and desperation. The ones with deeper pockets milled in private alcoves where they could while away their coin under the eager attention of succubi. Those with a thirst for more grit crowded the fighting pits, cheering and jeering at witless trolls and bloodthirsty satyrs. Avoiding all eye contact, Gabriel slid behind the bar to help himself to a bottle. The barman took one look at his face and wisely kept his mouth shut. Gabriel grabbed the most potent liquor he could find, took a hearty swig, and grimaced. Liquid fire coursed down his throat. Perfect. He made it halfway across the den before he caught the attention of one of the croupiers. The face straightened at the sight of him and promptly signaled for another to take his place. Damn it. Gabriel had been hoping to slip away unnoticed. As the man elbowed through the crowd, Gabriel made a beeline for the stairs.
Gabe!
Arcus yelled, nearly tripping a barmaid in his haste to catch up to him.
Where in the five flaming hells have you been? Wouldn't you like to know?
Gabriel ascended the stairs two at a time, wishing the other man would take the hint. He was not in the mood, his patience frayed and flimsy like a gambler's self-control. A portal flared on the steps to emit a stone-faced Arcus, who rooted himself squarely in Gabriel's path. Gabriel narrowed his eyes in warning, but Arcus merely folded his arms.
I've reviewed our manifests. You have no job scheduled, and we both know you haven't been to Amarine. Where have you gone?
With his menacing scowl and an array of glinting knives decorating his brawny chest, Arcus Ironfall probably induced a healthy amount of fear in most. Gabriel sidestepped him with a shrug. The most fearsome thing about his second in command was his incessant ability to henpeck like a scorned wife.
Have you nothing better to do than check up on me? I worry about you.
Gabriel took another pull from the bottle and smirked.
And there is your problem. You worry too much. Maybe you need to take a break. I'm sure Malachi or Caspian can look after the guild operations while you're away.
Arcus's lips hardened.
Stop it. Stop what?
Gabriel cocked a brow.
Putting up with you and your nagging.
Arcus moved to obstruct his path again, this time with a firm hand planted on the wall.
I'm serious, Gabe. Do you think I'm the only one who's noticed your absences? Two silverbeaks were loitering near Windswept Alley yesterday, looking. Please.
Gabriel rolled his eyes at the mention of mercenaries from a rival guild.
You don't need me to deal with a couple of rookheads.
No.
But they seem to be taking your repeated disappearances as a pass to slide into Evanmere. Is that what you want?
Arcus cocked a challenging brow.
Silverbeak strutting on our streets, dealing dream smoke in our alleys, preying on our people.
Arcus was tearing at his sense of responsibility. Gabriel knew that, yet he couldn't help the edge creeping into his retort.
Back off, Ironfall. What I do with my time is nobody's business but mine. Maybe if you hadn't made a habit of this, but it's been close to a year. A year of you disappearing at a whim to God's nowhere. Why can't you just tell me where you've been going?
Gabriel eyed his second in command over the rim of his bottle.
Should I file a report every time I head out, then? Do I need permission next time I take a piss?
Arcus exhaled heavily.
You know that's not what I'm asking. The Rookheads aren't only lingering, but also causing trouble. Vandalizing. Harassing shopkeepers. Small offenses, but enough to make our people restless.
Ever since Zenitus Balverus had ascended to the throne, his lapdogs, the Silverbeaks, had grown bolder and brasher by the day, backed by the unofficial patronage of a king. The rival guild's encroachment on Red Knight territory wasn't unique, however. There had been grumblings of the Rookheads causing trouble at Duskhall and Nightgate, making a similar nuisance of themselves in other guilds' territory.
Trust me,
I have everything under control. Gabriel took another pull of his drink.
Trust you?
Arcus snorted.
Look at you. You haven't touched liquor since...
Arcus ripped the bottle from his hand and sniffed.
Mujarin? You're downing Mujarin straight from the bottle now.
Disapproval oozed from the man's self-righteous pores.
Ozen's blood, Gabe, what? Enough.
Gabriel snatched his bottle back, dribbling an exorbitant amount of liquor in the process. Whatever patience he had dissipated like alcohol in his bloodstream.
You're my second, not my mother.
The Red Knight flinched, and shame flooded Gabriel's gut. Arcus wasn't just the guild's second in command, but his comrade, his cousin, one who had been with him since the cradle, and one who had been ensuring the guild operated seamlessly in his absences of late. Arcus didn't deserve his bullshit. Gabriel sighed.
Just stop worrying. I have everything under control.
Perhaps he'd get a few in the morning. Spilling Silverbeak blood and painting his streets scarlet might be crude, but crude was fine as long as it was effective. Arcus looked ready to belt him with more questions, but Gabriel pushed past him without another word. He needed to get to the attic, his personal haven where he could seek solace and sort out his thoughts, or he'd inadvertently end up there again. Arcus was certainly right on one count. Evanmere needed him here.
There is also someone waiting for you in the parlor.
Gabriel paused.
Deal with him yourself, or throw him out. Calls himself Hydra.
Arcus added, and Gabriel nearly missed a step.
He's been coming here 3 days now. Refuses to deal with anyone but you.
Are you sure you want me to see him out? Gabriel's mouth had gone dry, but it wasn't from Magerian liquor.
I'll see him.
Gabriel turned down the dim corridor to the private parlor with restlessness brewing in his chest. Hydra's appearance in the den could only herald trouble. He just wasn't sure of what kind. Creak. Gabriel grimaced and took more care with his footing. The floorboards should have been replaced years ago, and the carpets were worn thinner than a horse slip. Black Sage Manor, now known as the Red Den, had served his family for countless millennia, but unlike the other unseelie aristocrats, Gabriel could never seem to find the funds for the structural restoration the manor needed. It stung his pride, but at the very least, Black Sage Manor still belonged to a Black Sage. He chose to believe his parents would be satisfied with that. Pausing at the parlor door, he slipped a daikon, a four-pointed throwing star, up his sleeve for easy access. He did not truly believe himself in danger from Hydra, but some habits had saved his ass more times than he could count. He eased the door open. The gas lamp flickered, casting dancing shadows over the man, watching him with deceptive idleness from the armchair at the darkest end of the room. Hydra straightened and rose. His ice-white hair and clear violet eyes contrasted starkly with the back of his cloak. He appeared almost ordinary, with his coloring fairly common among unseelie kind. He wasn't. Hydra wore many faces. This was merely the one he donned whenever he played the part of the spare but precocious heir of the Winter Court.
Zion,
Gabriel said without preamble,
what are you doing here? Has something happened to her?
Prince Zion of the Winter Court, or by his lesser-known alias, Hydra, lifted an innocent brow paired with a faintly mocking smile.
Her? Who?
Gabriel tightened his jaw.
Don't play games with me, princeling.
I'm not a telepathic mage, guildmaster, but given your recent proclivities, one could hazard a guess.
a sinister chuckle.
Shiari?
Every fiber in Gabriel's body froze. That was not the name he'd expected from Zion's lips. Suddenly, the prince's appearance in the den spelled more torment than simple trouble. Gabriel stalked over to the sideboard and pulled out two glasses. Using the time to gather his wits, he poured the prince a glass of Fey Mead and kept his tone curt and casual.
You've been following me.
The prince accepted his offering with a shrug.
I believe in doing my due diligence on the people I work with. I'm not interested in working with you. No, I would have thought Yolanthe makes us friends of sorts.
Yolanthe. Gabriel had to fist his hand around his glass to keep it from shaking at the mention of her name. For years, he'd believed himself the single surviving black sage. For years, he'd worked ceaselessly to strengthen the Red Guild and, in his own way, right wrongs and pay his dues until that day. The day of Shiari's departure from the Mage Realm. Tasked by Declan to investigate Zion's claim of being the illegitimate son of Nathaniel Strom, the Archmage of Flen, and Declan's father, Gabriel had infiltrated the prince's stronghold. The secrets he'd uncovered had sent him sinking to the bottom of a bottle he'd continued to spiral into every time the past got the better of him. Friends, Gabriel repeated with a scoff as he eyed the prince over the rim of his glass. I wouldn't call us that. What do you want with Shiari?
Ah, straight to business and not a single inquiry after Yo's welfare. I thought your sister meant more to you than that.
Zion's smile held a soft and placid veneer, but the underlying taunt grated at Gabriel's patience.
Why are you really here, Zion?
He only received another chuckle. The bastard was baiting him. Too bad Gabriel was in no mood for games. The daikon sailed from his grip to slice the air between them, one silver prong embedded in the wall a hair's breadth from Zion's throat.
I'd stop wasting my time if I were you.
A fool might question his aim, but Zion was no fool. Just demented. The prince threw his head back in a laugh as though coming a whisker from a severed jugular were a particularly exhilarating experience.
Gods, now I know why Yo behaves the way she does. Are you black sages all so violent? Did missing out on the crown give you brain rot? Or do you believe you're somehow untouchable because you're Yolanthe's guardian?
Zion didn't appear the least bit fazed.
We both know you can't kill me. You must be naive if you think death is the only torment to be had. Perhaps you'd like a tour of the den.
Gabriel flashed his teeth.
I assure you, the gambling tables aren't the only source of amusement around here.
Still chuckling, Zion removed a hefty pouch from his cloak. A jingling shake proved it was filled with coins.
I'm here because I have a job for you, Guildmaster.
Gabriel set his glass down on the sideboard with a dull thud.
Then you've wasted your time and mine. I'm not taking marks.
It didn't matter that he could use the coin. He would never work with a man whose head he yearned to mount on a spike and watch the crows pick clean.
I'm not asking for a kill. I'm asking for a woman.
Zion paused with another one of those aggravatingly placid smiles, while sickness writhed in Gabriel's gut like a pit of snakes. The prince did not need to say her name for Gabriel to know whom he wanted.
And who better to retrieve the Pantherai female than the portal maker who knows exactly where her clan is?
The prince added with a small smirk. Gabriel's fingers itched for the blade strapped at his back. How easy would it be to relieve Zion of his head, to feel the snap of tearing muscles and the satisfying crunch of bone? But what good would come of it? They were at a stalemate as long as Yolanthe was in his care. Gabriel clenched his fists and clung to a semblance of civility while he served the prince a sneer.
You're in the wrong guild, princeling. We don't do that kind of thing here.
Zion moistened his lips. The movement vaguely reminded Gabriel of a cobra, scenting the air with its forked tongue just before striking its prey.
Even if I told you, she is the key to freeing your sister?
Chapter 2. Pantherai Clan. Jajunga Rainforest. Animati Realm. Perspiration licked at her nape, and impatience strummed restless fingers along her breastbone. Rainy season lorded over the jungle in a sweltering haze, trapping both heat and humidity beneath curling ferns and the ancient boughs of the great Kilinjiri tree. The congregation of sweat-slicked bodies within the clan's ceremonial hollow caused children to fidget like fish on hot sand, but the adults managed a semblance of serenity, fanning themselves with palm fronds as they feigned interest in the clan elder's rote speech.
We are gathered here today to witness the Hosungai of Shaeri, daughter of Baleen, to Hesak, son of Rajesh, through the tethering.
Shaeri grimaced inwardly. Hosungai could be a day of dreams, or dread. A day when a female was claimed, or more appropriately, tethered to a male that would be her life mate. For Shaeri, it was neither. Hosungai was only another day of duty, one she was determined to complete.
To enhance the chances of a clan's continuity, Thorin blesses every warrior twice over.
As the Pajitasi droned on about the importance of Hosungai for the survival of their species, Shaeri plucked discreetly at the rope sticking into her collarbone. The infernal ties were everywhere, crisscrossed all over her limbs and torso like parasitic vines clinging to a tree. Beneath the knots, she was allowed to wear only a bandeau over her breasts and scraps of cloth that hung from her hips like the petals of a wilted flower. It was a ceremonial outfit, meant to symbolize the submissiveness and sensuality of the bride, the ropes to be undone only by the groom at the end of Hosungai. Gods above, how they itched. She had no idea how other brides had made it to sundown suffering this abomination of a fishnet, and they were still expected to glow with happiness, while grooms wore their usual leathers with the addition of only a single rope at their wrist, one attached to the bride's throat, like a leash. There was a reason Hosungai was deemed a tethering of the bride, and not the binding of a couple. A female was tethered to her warrior, but not the other way around, because every warrior was assigned not one, but two brides, one for each wrist.
Hosungai is a reward for our warriors, each bride a priceless gift from Thorin himself.
The Pajitasi continued. Shaeri snuck a glance at her soon-to-be life-mate kneeling on the moss-padded ground beside her. Shafts of sunlight spearing through the canopy cast a near ethereal glow across Hesek's rugged features. He'd made an effort to trim his beard, and even had his usually shaggy black mane braided into a neat queue. Broad-shouldered and brawny, he was pleasant on the eyes. Handsome, even. Many untethered females would be thrilled to be one of Hesek's arranged brides. Unfortunately, Shaeri did not share even a sliver of that feminine excitement. Idly fiddling with the rope connecting them, Hesek's gaze searched the crowd until he found Amalia, his other arranged bride, still several seasons too young to be tethered. His gaze lingered on the bronze beauty, while Shaeri had not received a single genuine smile since their Hosungai ceremony began. Shaeri did not blame him. If she were a warrior with a choice, she would not have chosen herself for a bride either. Her condition meant no male wanted her, despite her place in the clan's hierarchy. Fortunately for her, Hesek was decent enough to honor their late father's arrangement. Shaeri did require a life mate.
Not for the companionship, or the fact that Hosungai would allow her a hut and hearth of her own.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?